for the last maybe 6 months or a year, and the body just sort of just deteriorated almost like overnight. But he was an interesting person. I can never once remember my father telling me or any of my family, any of the children, that, you know, that he loved us. I can probably count on my hand the times that he ever gave us and he gave me anything. And so, I grew up not knowing, but actually having some, I would consider disgust or perhaps anger toward my father. My father had his own businesses. He somehow was pretty expert in making money, but he never spent anything, he never gave anything to anyone, and he was like a Scrooge. He just collected and collected. And he wouldn't even spend anything on himself. He'd have to wear the same suit for 30, 40 years. I mean, it was unbelievable. Same pair of shoes that he had for, you know, for 20 years. And then if he bought something, he would make sure that, you know, he got it at the most cheapest price. And so it was, you know, growing up with someone like that, it was hard to understand. As I became a devotee, you know, I started trying to understand him a little better, of course. And at one point, my mother, she shared with me something about my father. Why she waited so long, I don't know. But she explained, he was kind of like the black sheep in the family. And he was always kind of told that you'll never be anything. And so he was always, his whole life, trying to prove that he's going to be something. And so he wanted to, you know, be respected based on his wealth. And so he was so much into trying to acquire things that he never really used anything. He just acquired and acquired, and he must have had about, 15 bank accounts. I mean, it was awesome. It was amazing. But he never would spend anything. And if he was just driving the streets or walking, he'd find something, he'd pick it up, and he'd put it in his basement or put it in the garage or one of his houses. He would just collect, collect, collect. So he had this kind of mood of always trying somehow to show that he was going to be an achiever. So it had also a little bit to do with racism. He was from the South. And so, see, part of my family is Italian, part of my family is African-American, etc. Interesting connection. Americans with all kind of strange backgrounds. Interesting, diverse backgrounds. So he had this constant sort of mood of feeling that he had to prove himself. Now, after he left the body and I started thinking a little more about how he was always so much in pain. And because of his own pain, he was paining others. So his pain, the way he pained others, was to the degree of his own pain. So sometimes people do things and they hurt us, but often what they've done to us is really a manifestation of how much they are paining inside themselves. And if we see it only as that, we may miss a chance to understand them, a chance to gain greater understanding about ourselves, a chance to increase or improve a relationship. So again, it's a matter of codifying, perceiving, so much to do with attitude. Now, as devotees, we often think that we've walked away from these things, or we're thinking that we love everyone, but it's not quite the case. As we talked about the different states of consciousness, so many ways how the mind shifts. It puts patterns into the subtle body. Or so many things that happen to us puts patterns in the mind that then sometimes become like knots within one's consciousness. And so a devotee is to be freed of all of these things in such ways. And sometimes we're in denial, but we're not having depreciation for people in terms of realizing that everyone is a spiritual being and that we have a duty to try to share devotion and love, whatever the situation is. So what I would like to do with our little travel, I gave you that story to act as a catalyst for something that we're going to do later. But what we would like to do is, if you don't mind, we'd like to go on a little trip for the next 10 minutes to Vrindavan. We won't have to pay airfare or whatever. We're going to cheat a little bit. and be there in a matter of minutes. When I mentioned yesterday about the different states, and we talked about the beta and the alpha state, we mentioned how the alpha state is like a slight hypnotic, a slight reflection, a daydream. You're conscious, but you're not fully alert about what is going on around. So it's a state of relaxation also. When you relax, you're not so much trying to see and hear everything that's happening. You're aware, but you're not so much concerned. And that's a state that also has the ability to, you know, it brings some creativity, and it helps us to feel a little bit of peace and become free of stress in various ways. And so what we like to do is just to kind of relax you a little bit. Put you in an alpha state is so easy. You can just close your eyes and count back from, count from 1 to 10. And the mind, the body, will go through a certain transition. Now, some of you may be a little tired. When you close your eyes, you may just go to sleep. If you do that, that's also okay, because it means you probably need a little more rest. Or maybe you ate a little too much at lunchtime, and that's also okay. But I'll be talking to you for a little while so that you perhaps won't go to sleep. But you keep your eyes closed, and you just try to listen, you know, to our little trip in Vrindavan. And if you do this, then hopefully you won't go to sleep, and then we'll discuss why and the interesting things, you know, that's involved in this little trip. So if you're already sleepy, you just close your eyes and go to sleep, and it's all right. You'll get a 10-minute break, and we'll let you know when the break is over. So, and this is not like some touchy-feely thing. The fact that I'm going to put on a tape, the tape is going to be I think Dodi does some concerts here, some workshops, or comes during the festival. You have a music festival later in the year here in Belgium? What is it called? Summer festival. It's a tape by Jaya Dave. And it's basically, it's nice soft music, and then there is the chanting of Radha and Krishna, Lord Shyam. It's just very steady in this way. And so while you're in this alpha state, and I'm talking, when we take you in a relaxed state, just kind of listen to, you know, the name Krishna, Radha, while we are also sharing something with you. And listen to the holy name. We are engaged in Smaranam. The scriptures emphasize that one should aspire to go to Vrindavan. So everything we're doing, it's Shastric. It's okay. It's the holy name that we're trying to get more into. We're trying to be free of the duality. We're trying to break these various patterns. I may have to ask those who are translating. You may not be able to translate this because when we close our eyes, if voices are being heard, it will be a little distracting. We also recommend all of you, as much as possible, try to get the tapes of the class. You know, I've been talking a little fast. My accent is sometimes a little heavy. But there are a lot of things we've put into these classes. And when you hear it again, there'll be some things you'll pick up that you didn't pick up when you were sitting here. So if you do have a chance, I think later Saturday or Sunday, all the tapes for all of the seminars will be available. And I particularly ask you to get these tapes because you're going to find that so many things that we're discussing these few days that it's going to be even more relevant and important in the near future for helping yourself and for helping people, you know, in your various temples and communities. What to say of what people will be experiencing more in the secular world. So there are certain things that have been discussed that can help you to avoid certain complexities, give you more sensitivity in helping others who are going through certain changes, and just to help you to focus more on the power of the mind, what the mind can do, and being less affected by mental types of intrusions that are, in fact, unhealthy. So I'm just going to put this tape on, but if you don't mind, if you can just close your eyes. If you want to go to sleep for 10 minutes, we don't mind. But if you just want to relax, then do such. But the idea is just to shift the mind so that the mind is able to feel relaxed.
So we just want each of you just to kind of feel comfortable in the chair. How are you sitting? Just try to, you know, see that you're comfortable, that your legs are not crossed, your hands are not crossed, but that you just feel relaxed. So the first thing we'd like you to do, before we go to Vrindavan, we'd like you to, you know, to take 3 deep breaths. This is a matter of sort of letting out a little stress or tension. Each breath, just feel like you're just, you know, letting out a little stress or tension. Just taking another deep breath. Now, while your eyes are closed, we just want to imagine that we are on the base of the Jamuna, and just sort of visualize things as, you know, as I try to describe them. You're lying down, you know, on a nice cot, and the weather's very nice. The Jamuna River, the day is very clean, the sun is shining. It's not too hot, it's not cool, it's just sort of a nice breeze. So just try to see, while your eyes are closed, just try to see yourself on the banks of the Jamuna. You're not having to have to, you know, worry about any services or anybody bothering you or anything. But you're just appreciating that you're in Vrindavan. And that Vrindavan it's our home. We're trying to ultimately be able to go back and be in Vrindavan eternally with the divine couple. Now, while you are lying down on this cot, you're just realizing that the body is, you know, it's a burden. We have these bodies, we're not this body. We have this mind, but we're not these minds. We know that the soul is eternal, and the soul has opportunities ultimately to associate with Radha and Krishna. And as you hear the music, where it's just a constant calling of Radhe and then Shyam. He's thinking, yes, this is what it's really about. It's about going back and being in the spiritual world. That all the time that we're in these material worlds, these material bodies, it's just a small time ultimately. All the while we're here and we're struggling, it seems quite like a long time. Like when Lord Rama stole the cow or the boys and calves. It seemed like a long time, but it was a short time. So while you're there in Vrindavan on the banks of the Jamuna, and you're just hearing this wonderful chanting of Radhe, and then later you're hearing this chanting of Shyam, you are very happy because you're not having depression. You're not having anxiety. You realize that Radharani is the mother of devotion. That she's always concerned about every one of her servants. And she has no favorites. You are noticing that a young cowherd boy, for those of you who are in male bodies, you were seeing this Vrijabhasi, young small kid, who could be a cowherd boy. Those in female bodies, you were seeing this young Vrijabhasi, who was a cowherd girl, young Vrijabhasi girl. And she approaches you while you're on the bank of the Jamuna. And it is something that's so amazing about this little child. You don't know whether she's or he is some kind of angelic entity, some kind of deva, whether it's some entity out of Krishna's pastimes. But you're just feeling the love coming from this person's eyes as this boy or little girl looks at you. And this child somehow just wants to touch you, wants to massage you while you're laying there. So the child starts massaging your feet first, and then your legs and knees, And then you just feel more stress and tension and anxiety is leaving. And somehow this child is helping you to think even more about the Divine Mother, Radharani. This child is helping you to think more about Krishna's, how he is a cowherd boy. And how Vrindavan is really a simple place. That all material universes are full of duplicity and anxiety and all kinds of problems that are associated with growth and failure and productivity. But Vrindavan is just a simple place. Then the child massages your back and your neck and your head, and you just feel that you're really not this body. And now the child points over in a direction, and you are amazed at what you see. And you just try to visualize that this child is pointing to a person who is standing some distance from you, who is a person who has given you a lot of pain in your life. Someone who you perhaps have not forgiven, or someone who you partially forgave, someone who you feel that you should have tried to understand better, but you didn't. So as you're thinking how Radharani does not hold any grudges, she only emanates love. Her servants. And Shyamasundar, he is only concerned about the welfare of all. And you're happy to be there in Vrindavan, but you know that real Vrindavan means you must be fully like the residents of Vrindavan. So you just reflect on this person, and it will vary for each of us. It may be your guru who disappointed you. It may be husband or wife. It may be one of your children who you haven't forgiven. It may be, it's like the story I gave you, someone earlier in your life. But just see this person, and you're noticing that this person is cheerful. This person looks very sad. This person is experiencing great anxiety. And what this little Brijabasi child is helping you to realize is that actually this individual is suffering, and what they did to you that you have not forgiven them on or held some grudge is really due to the pain that they're experiencing themselves. And so as you see this person in such a devastated state, your heart goes out. And you feel somewhat bad that you were holding a grudge, that you were insensitive. You realize, as we were describing on the board, that everything is a matter of perception. And so this child is helping you to realize that not only with this individual, but in any instances where you haven't forgiven someone, that you can try to see this in another light. Because in order for you to be able to one day eternally enter into Vrindavan in the spiritual world, one has to be free of all of these things. So now, as you're just thinking more about Radhe, about Krishna, and reflecting on this experience, the child is walking away and waving. And you're waving at the child also. But the child is letting you know that Radha and Krishna are so much having love for you, that they have so many ways to assist you, and that whenever you're finding yourself to be in any type of difficulty, what to say of anger or not letting go, frustration, not being forgiving, that you should just remember that there are other ways of looking at this situation, and that these things can be used for growth. So now as the child is leaving, you are beginning to feel more that you have certain things that you have to do in execution of your devotional service. So just as we had three breaths and we kind of relieved some of the tension, we're going to just take three breaths, and we're just going to come back into our beta state or our full alert state. We've just been in this slight alpha state, a little relaxed, which is replenishing for the body and nice to in any way think about Vrindavan. always nice to think about being free from any of the modes of material nature. So we're just going to take three breaths, and then after the third breath, we'll open up our eyes, and then we'll share something. We've just been hearing the name of Radha, the name of Shyam, having a chance to relax on the banks of Jamuna, having a chance to realize that everyone ultimately is looking for love, and sometimes in a misdirected way, people may do things to us that are improper, but we want to not play into it, we want to rise above it. So you just take three big deep breaths, and then you just open your eyes and after such deep breaths. So the last few minutes, what we would like to do, a few of you maybe we have went to sleep, but most of you didn't. But you can see the difference from 10 minutes before, when you were pretty much in the beta state, and then just from closing your eyes and because of music and little conversation, that the consciousness changes. And when one is in that state, a lot of important things can be picked up. A lot of things that can assist us in our spiritual life, because we kind of tune off a little bit to the externals, that our senses are normally grabbing so many things. We're going deeper, deeper, a little closer to the soul. So the senses, when they see and hear things, they're constantly grabbing. So the tendency is the vagus are pushing and we're responding. But as we control the mind through spiritual absorption, then even though the stimulation is there, we do not play into it very much. So I want to take just 5 minutes. It's going to be a little hard in this room, but we would like each of you just to take a partner, whoever's next to you, you just pray off in twos, just turn your chair, and if you can just, in the 5 minutes time, you can just explain to the person next to you what, if you like, you don't want to do it, you can understand, you just listen if you somehow don't want to speak to yourself. We like both persons to do. We like you to just tell the person next to you something about your experience, who that person was, who you saw, who you were forgiving, or who you felt you could have acted differently toward, and just something very brief about that experience. Then the other person tell the other one something brief about their experience. Okay? So we're just going to do that for 5 minutes. So we just turn to someone, and you just tell them a little bit about that person who you saw and what it meant to you. Okay, you got 30 seconds to wrap it up. All right, we can end our stories. Now, this is also a lesson in attentive listening. Now, we would like a few of you to explain what the other person said. So, someone discussed something with you, and then you discuss something with them. There was someone who you were singling out that you wanted to forgive, with someone you felt that relationship could be better. So that person perhaps was being visualized that you were there on the bank of the Jamuna. So, do we call or we just raise our hand? So, we have a few volunteers first. You're just going to tell on the other person, not on yourself, so it's okay, right? Yes.
When she thought of the person, she starts crying in her mind, you know. Just by seeing the person, she was crying.
Yes, this is what we're saying. Sometimes when we reflect on these individuals who have given us such pain. See, nobody gives us more pain than those who we care for the most. Those you care for the most, they can give you the most happiness. They can also give you the most pain. Most of you, as you were visualizing someone, is probably someone who has maybe at some times given you the most happiness, and at the same time they put you in the most distressful position. And so we may have that feeling. Some of you may have saw yourselves crying, and some of you may were even tearing. Your physical body was tearing. Anyone else?
Yeah,
like to share someone else? Yes, please.
Is this picking up on that?
Yeah,
just try to speak louder.
Okay, she saw her mother, but then she saw also her devoted friend. And then she could see that the relationship was not like so good, but now she felt, she could understand that she should take it up more. I mean, she confronted or make something to make it better.
So
then she saw a devoted friend, special friend. She also saw her mother. And she got some realizations that there's some way that she could actually make the relationship better. So, use it and work on it. Someone else can share what they were listening, what they heard? And I'll raise your hands at once. Okay, you can share what she told you.
Well, she had problems in the beginning. She couldn't visualize herself laying down on the Yamuna River, and she couldn't visualize the little girl either. But when it came to thinking of the person, she immediately knew who the person was. And she saw, she understood that there is something that can be done.
Were you able to sort of release some of the anxiety that you were having, son?
Were you able to think about that person maybe in a little bit of a different light? Considering that what the person did, perhaps they didn't fully understand what they were doing, perhaps they were sharing some pain in a certain way, perhaps there's something you could have done or can do differently?
Actually, by seeing this person, I could understand that the thing that is happening between us is a karmic reaction, that is actually Krishna's mercy so that we can progress. It actually was not a problem for me.
So as she was thinking of this person, then she was realizing that this incoherence, the difficulty, is something karmic. And that these karmic things are there, and we're not so comfortable with them. But karma means that there's definitely something there that we are to grow from and something we are to work on. Yes.
She couldn't visualize really the persons, although she knows some persons, but she wanted to just relax in the Yamuna and think about Krishna, forget everything. And she said, if I could do that really in reality and really get this love of Radha and Radha Krishna, she would be able to forgive everybody. So she felt that if she could get to this stage, then it would be more easy to
relax. Yes, that's very deep. She wants to go right to the source. She's realizing, well, if I could have prema, I wouldn't be worrying about anything. Any one person or any person who may come in the future who may give any difficulty in my life. And so therefore, she uses this as a chance to think deeply about our relationship to what we're doing in this process and how we all have a chance to become Krishna conscious. So for her, it became more of a longing, wanting to be more Krishna conscious, so that none of these issues would even be of any relevance. A few more can share? Yes.
I could understand for me that often this betrayal is equal to the pain that the person is feeling.
He was able to understand that the betrayal, he felt betrayed by someone, but realizing that it has to do with what's going on in that individual's consciousness who has done the betrayal. See, as we develop more and more love for people, even when someone does something to us that's harsh, we feel more sad for them than anger. Because we realize that they have hurt themselves, we realize that there's karmic reaction that they'll experience, and we also are thinking how we can do something a little different so we'll not put them in that kind of distress or cause them to act, in such an improper way. Anyone else? Now, if you like, you can share your own as well. You share either you can do that for the next 5 minutes. Because sometimes you will share it and maybe the person didn't know, doesn't want you to share, and you feel a little shy about that. So let us share our own.
My oldest brother was inimical to us when he arrived from birth, so he refused to talk to me for the first 4 years of my life, and he tried to inflict pain on me when I was a kid. And later I was felt threatened by him that he wanted to kill me. And up till now, there's no relationship. But I came to realize, although I could have known it before, that I must have done something to him. And I feel now more that it's actually he, myself, who is a wrongdoer. Otherwise, I can't explain my behavior.
Yes, interesting, because some of us have come from backgrounds that were, you know, abusive. A few people are experiencing incest or some other type of abuse or alcohol in the family, separation, some maybe from orphan backgrounds. And so we can carry these anger and grudges in so many ways. We're also realizing that behind everything there is some reason. When we leave these bodies, before we take another body, then higher authorities, they make an arrangement. There's something about our families, why we come into that family, that country, that race, that at a particular time in history, or even on a particular planet. And since much of our being here is to be clear on what we need to be free of so we can get that which is waiting for us, the great treasures, then a lot of our devotional service is really based on just becoming natural or waking up. Jiva Jago has more to do because our inherent nature is that we're pure. So we're not really so much trying to become something. We're trying to see what we can shed and get rid of to reestablish what we already were. The soul is pure. And as we look a little closer at some of these issues in our lives, we can try to see from what we are to learn from this, what we are to shed and to be free of, so that we can reestablish ourselves. A few others can tell about their own experience.
I was thinking of two persons actually in my life who were
close. Just speak just a little now.
I was thinking of two persons because they had hurt me a lot, and I had been very painful for years and years, and but it was very good for me to realize that actually these people, like what you say, the pain they caused me must be at least equal to the pain that they bear in their hearts, which caused them to act in a certain way towards me. And to realize that these people, they are careful, they have so much pain. It really helps me to just let go and feel sorry for them.
Very good.
Did you feel from this little exercise you were able to let go a little more? That's good. See, this is only a 15-minute sleep for some people, relaxation. But it was really a lot more than that. Remember I said that some of the things that we are doing in this session will have ability to alter some karma.
Can you speak loud?
I was... briefly, I just saw my parents, my brother, but in, rather than a brother, a typically selfish way, I saw myself, particularly the way I have been recently, as I was coming to devotional service, you know. And as you were describing Vrindavan and the little boy, I was thinking of Krishna, and it just made me feel very upset, emotional, that I want to be there, but I'm such a nonsense, and I'm, you know, just... It just made me self-pity. Mm-hmm.
So in his case, he's first thinking of his issues with his mother and father and brother, but then the greater issues was with himself. So he was then thinking that here is Vrindavan, here is our eternal chance to be in our eternal home, but I'm so much nonsense in so many ways, I'm doing so much harm to myself. Many of our issues is we have to forgive ourselves also. We've done many things in certain ways that at certain times, but we have to also to learn from that, not to just forget about it, but to learn from it and then look to the future. Many people are having so much trouble in their lives, they just keep looking back at some failure, at some mistake, and it just stagnates them from being able to do what they can do, what causes them not to take advantage of opportunities or advantages of Krishna's mercy, because they're still living so much in the past. Just a few more, and then we'll stop for today.
Mm-hmm. For me, when I was visualizing this little girl, and when you said that she's pointing out to somebody,
at first I before you said to whom she needs to point out, I saw this like kind of like light, and then I was almost like I would see Krishna. But then you said that it has to be the person that I can forgive. And it was a surprising moment for me, because then I was thinking, so who should I forgive? And it was like, I couldn't see a person. And the thoughts were like, oh, there were a few persons that were coming about, but not like person, but like thoughts, maybe this, maybe that, also myself. But then somehow it wasn't so, it felt like it's not so much important. And then afterwards, we woke up from this meditation, I was thinking actually it might be because I've done some work before this exercise on myself, that maybe last year or some time ago I would see the person, but now it's somehow that I could almost see that there's Krishna in this up there, that this person is pointing out. So then all these issues, they seem not so much important.
Yeah. That's good. Some people, they had trouble because they were seeing so many. They didn't know which person to focus on. Thinking, the whole list. Others, there was some that were very dominant, you know, that they really have an issue with. In other cases, as you were saying, some people have kind of confronted that and dealt with that. And then there's some people who really just don't hold grudges and have tried to take everything in stride in such ways. But that's a little rare. So in your case, you've worked on some of this, and so you were not having to focus on any one person in such a way. Anyone else? Please.
When you brought up the view of Vrindavan, I gradually dropped in and seen the beauty, and I started thinking of Radharani's beauty when I saw her eyes. Suddenly I feel I almost cried. I feel my eyes become hot, and I feel kind of painful that this material is so terrible and Radharani is so attractive. She's so beautiful, her eyes just attract me. And then after you bring up the children are so beautiful, the cow, everything, then it makes me suddenly become very cheerful, very happy. And then suddenly turn to a point to think about someone who is being hurt or difficult to accept this kind of thing. I think of my mother, there's some complexity. And I don't know how to deal with it. I think just my karma. And then another point, another person would be some senior person. But I get the solution. I have to find some confidential person to make a mediator for my communication. So that's a good review.
This is your anchor.
So you tuned into the environment in a deep way and you felt some mercy, reflecting on visualizing Srimati Radharani. And then you had a chance to reflect on your mother. Again, those who are the closest to us are those who can give us the most love, and we give them the most, and also the ones who can give us the greatest pain. In some cases, in trying to work these things out, it cannot always be done on a one-to-one. There's a need for bringing others in to try to assist. But at least we should approach it in such a way that we're really trying to see how we can serve better, how we can use it to become more Krishna conscious, and how we can help that particular person. Especially like in the case where it is someone who is a non-devotee, and we are now devotees. So it is the duty of the devotee to always try to help others think of Krishna. Once we've taken initiation, it's like we are representing Lord Caitanya's mission, and we're carrying a certain amount of empowerment. So when people do bad things to us, then they suffer more than they would to just an average person. They may do something too. When they do something to help us, then it's as if they are also helping Lord Caitanya's mission. They get blessings and benediction. So we should try to be very careful that we do not offend others or cause others to offend us. And in some cases where people may have been in an offensive mood, if there's a way that we can try to improve on the situation or to change it, even if they were wrong, but in some cases, it's good that we approach them and we apologize, or that we initiate the connection so that that person can be freed of such. Devotee is to be a great carrier of devotion and love. It is love, it is bhakti and love that is the initial aspects of development of what we're trying to do. It is the means, it is also the end. And so everything must integrate more and more with bhakti and more love. We can't enter into the divine realm of the spiritual kingdom, the divine realm of ultimate love, without being loving. When we are not developing real devotion, which is love with knowledge, then we're more like yogis than actual bhaktis. A lot of our failure in our movement is that sometimes we are making pundits and yogis and not bhaktis. Because many, many times people know so much and they rationalize all types of deviations. Or they have all different types of facilities and sometimes even shaktis, even power, but somehow, again, failure. But why? Because we cannot. Krishna will give bhukti, mukti, siddhi, sometimes rather easy. But bhakti means that we really have to be coming with empty hands, ready to receive all. If we're not ready to receive all and our hands are too much full, then we will get distracted in different ways. So I think we can take one more and then we're done. Mm-hmm.
But like he said, if you want to be able to forgive, it's possible only or mostly when you love Krishna, then you get the love to also be more forgiving. So how does it start? Because it's difficult to be forgiving if you still have this bad form.
Yes, it's difficult to forgiving if we think it's difficult. If we keep telling ourselves it's difficult, we're really saying, I don't really want to do this. I don't really want to let this go. I really don't want to see what to move out of this space. No, it's not difficult. We work all the time in trying to hold on to certain things. We begin to feel comfortable in feeling a certain way and holding on to certain things. But just as we can grab hold of something, we can also let go. We just have to feel confident that letting go is going to be okay. It's like there are some people who are chronically ill. And they just can't live without that chronic problem because that's their identity. If they were freed from that chronic problem, they wouldn't have any identity practically. So there are some people who hold on to certain things when there is a chance to be freed of it. But they become so much habituated to it that they begin to identify with it. So yes, difficult to a certain extent because of the environment and our experiences, but you know, we can let go. Let's see. Last 2 minutes, any short question that we have?
Mm-hmm. How can I be convinced that actually my nature is blissful and eternal?
The way that you can be convinced is that you, as well as everyone else who has a certain basic sense of sanity, is always looking for pleasure. So if we're looking for pleasure, where has that come from? That we see basically in the material world, everything is relative. Everything is temporary. But we all want pleasure to be everlasting. So where is this everlasting anti-material desire is coming from? It's coming from our real existence. Something cannot come from nothing. So we all have that, even animals, the plants all have some desire for longevity and for pleasure. And that is only experienced in a limited sense in material relationships. That's why we're always longing and hungry for something greater. Mm-hmm. Another question? Yes?
What about repentance? Because forgiveness is going with... It's what I feel personally when I'm hurt, that it's very easy to forgive somebody if you repent. That's yes. Going together.
If they repent, it's easy to forgive them. Yes, but we don't want to be locked or slowed down or stagnated based on what someone else does or doesn't do. In other words, if we're only ready to forgive someone if they change and ask for forgiveness, then we're letting that person's evil doing or sin dominate and control our lives. And we don't want to give our power over to such a sinful activity or sinful person or whatever. When we hold these sentiments of anger and lack of forgiving, we're then attacking ourselves again. We've let them attack us, and now we're being attacked again. Yes?
So we have to first learn to love and serve each other to be able to love and serve Krishna.
Yes. See, trying to serve Krishna and love Krishna directly is sahajiyism. Also, trying to serve and love Guru directly is also fanaticism or hero worship. We are able to love our spiritual authorities, Guru, by genuine love of sadhu. As we have genuine service mood and love of sadhu, then we have healthy love and relationship to our Guru, which then becomes healthy and strong relationship of Krishna. When someone is in the mood, you know, I can just serve my Guru. Or I just serve the senior devotees. They're not serving anybody. That's so much mixed devotional service like anything. Or someone is thinking, I just go to Krishna only. No. There's a process. When we have healthy relationship to a Guru, it distinctly shows in healthy relationship of sadhu. Everything has to do pretty much with sadhu sangha. By proper sadhu sangha, then our relationship with Guru becomes genuine. Otherwise, we might as well just be looking at Guru as like a pop star, a new movie star. You know, it's just hero worship. And that's bad for the disciple. It's also bad for the Guru. When a spiritual master has people, so many people like that around them, that goes into the Guru's consciousness. The spiritual master has many people around him who he's not raising their consciousness, then he begins to start thinking like them and will start acting like them. It is very dangerous. There are no free rides. If we take a position, devotion, care, then there is a tax for that. So if people are offering you things, offering you your service, giving you things, thinking of you, then you are held responsible to be able to guide, to help and facilitate. And so if one is just accepting and not trying to raise consciousness, or allowing lower consciousness to develop and develop and develop, then there will be disaster. There will be failure. Everyone is held accountable. This is the process of bhakti, and it should be that way. Any last question?
I was thinking of after a few things you had said yesterday, like if we associate among ourselves with devotees and we develop fellowship and friendship, and like one friend, they may go astray, and so if we want to prove our friendship, we don't. We keep associating with them. But so how should we avoid being influenced by their deviations?
Okay. It's a good question to end on. Real friendship is not just based on pleasing someone's personality or they pleasing yours, but it's really caring about the highest well-being of that person. So sometimes the best thing we can do for a friend is to not be with that person because of our concern and affection for that individual, that we do not want to be around them as we see them doing such harm to themselves. And we let them know that I really care for you, but I cannot be around you, which will reinforce what you're doing or make it seem like it's okay. I am there, I am ready for you, I am in the background, but I have no desire to see you hurting yourself or for me to play a role in adding to your hurt. So sometimes it means that we have to physically separate ourselves to be able to help to stimulate them and also to protect ourselves. And if we're in associations where people are making offenses or doing something that's improper, say for instance, someone is just in a really critical mood. We are spiritual scientists, so we are supposed to study and to look and to evaluate. But not just for the sake of just trying to find fault, or just to blaspheme or whatever. But if we find that someone is criticizing another person, then one way to help the whole situation is to ask the person, oh, I understand. Well, Prabhu, what do you think that we can do to assist that person? What do you think our role should be or can be? So then you take it up to a higher level. And if the individual is not really wanting to do something that is positive, they won't bring those conversations to you anymore. They'll go somewhere else where they get fed and reinforced. In this way, you're not brought down, and you are being a good servant to that person or reminding them about something better. It's up to them whether they accept or not. But whenever there is one way, a little technology to deal with, you know, fault finding, analysis, evaluation, But you ask, Babu, what can be our role? How can we assist? What is our role that has created this? What can we do to make things better in this way? Okay, so what we looked at today then was the idea of forgiveness from the point of view of the different altered states of consciousness. So we had a chance to visit the Alpha. We really took you a little lower than Alpha. Well, we should say higher. Based on kind of the general mood of the room, that some of you went a little deep, which is very good. And so in that process, you were able to touch some real cores, you know, in the consciousness. Just as you can see from some of the sharing, is that in some cases you're looking closer at ways of how to adjust and deal with some of these problems. And just try to use this sort of reflection more often. When you find that you're being confronted and there's, something that's not wonderful, what someone says or does, instead of just retaliating and all that other list, you know, that we had earlier, we should be careful, you know, not to hold a grudge. Be more sensitive about letting go, wishing the best for the person. If the relationship has been ceased, try to reestablish it if possible. Look closer at, the other polarity to try to understand why that individual is doing or saying what they did. This helps us to get relief from the heart and to bring closure. Because some of these situations that are so dominant in our lives, what will happen is that if we're not careful, we'll have to take another body just to work out some things with that person. And we don't want anybody to be pulling us back into the material world. Some of the issues that are so painful and so disturbing that it will be so much a part of our conscience that it will bring us to a situation where we have to meet up with that person again and have to work something out. Accepting persons as they are, mercifulness, and moving ahead. And then that last list here, as you reflect on it as you leave, we looked at all of these negative traits, misunderstanding, things that comes to our minds when we are, I think this is our list, what happens when we are feeling hurt, and things that comes, lack of forgiveness, misunderstanding, betrayal, when someone breaks our heart, breaks promises, we feel pain, we shut down, we retaliate, or we avoid them. And some interesting things here that were quite positive at the end. Crying out for help and understanding that many of these things are karma, our karma, the other person's karma. So tomorrow we have about 3/4 of the time, and we'll just try to summarize what we've gone through. We'll try to look a little closer at some of the questions you have from the different days. There may be some things that you need to have clarified a little more. And if we have time, we'll do what we put off before, discussing a little bit about when you felt most Krishna conscious and what was going on. This whole discussions that we're having this seminar is really about the mind and about consciousness. But more important, it's about how to be able to gain more control of things that's happening to us so that we can be able to be freer and freer of secondary things and focus more on our primary concerns. Krishna conscious really means of how to become simple again, how to become freed of unnecessary things, anarthas, and realizing that Krishna's love is there, is more available and waiting for us than we realize. But we just have to have a greater sensitivity and attitude that allows us to perceive, to be able, you know, to receive. So think about what happened in that little reflection that we gave you. It was a slight meditation, actually. It was a rather deep alpha experience. And for many of you, some answers to some problems were within that reflection that you had. So use it and try to improve on your relationships. Srila Prabhupada ki. Sri Sri Radha Gopinatha ji ki. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. I think we lost a few people today. Did we stress them out? I think we were told we have a few minutes shorter today. And it's our last day. So that's good or bad? I become a little attached. So we'll try to move through things a little quick so we can have maybe almost half the session just for questions and answers or clarifications and things that we discussed the last couple of days. But we do remind you, if possible, try to get the tapes to all the classes. There's always there are things that you'll pick up later that you didn't hear when you were in the room due to being in a alpha state. And perhaps when you hear it the next time, you're in a beta state and you'll be able to pick up a little better. I just want to read for 4 minutes just a few quotes that Srila Prabhupada mentions or gives us or Bhagavad Gita, which addresses the issues of forgiveness. First, to Tikshu, Prabhupada explains, a devotee forgives and forgets any offense against himself or herself. A Vaishnava is personally detached from this material body, which is made of pus, dew, blood, and so on. Therefore, the devotee is able to overlook the obnoxious behavior he sometimes meets with in the course of preaching work and always deals with people as perfect gentlemen. A Vaishnava loudly chants the holy name of the Lord and tolerates and forgives those fallen conditioned souls and aspiring devotees who are unable to reciprocate properly with him. And then Bhagavad Gita, Yashman no vichate loko, lokan no vichate cha yaha, hasmasha bayo dwegir, mukta yasa chame priyaha. I can't see with my glasses, I can't see without them. I'm serious. I didn't notice I couldn't read the board this morning in Bhagavatam class, and I was thinking, I got four eyes and I still can't see the board. Three different, yes. I had that before, but then walking up the stairs, going down the stairs became a problem. You hold your head up, you're going down. Trying to focus. When you become half a century, everything changes. Translation, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equal poles in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. So Krishna is telling us something confidential. He's letting us know that when we are not disturbed by such things, then we can become very, very dear to him. Again, how important it is not to attach oneself too much to such things. Purport. A few of a devotee's qualifications are further being described. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. At the same time, if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he retaliates. No, he is not disturbed. It is by the grace of the Lord that he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. Actually, because the devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, a materialistic person becomes very happy when there is something for his sense gratification and his body. But when he sees that others have something for their sense gratification, and he hasn't, he is sorry and envious. When he is expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he is in a state of fear. And when he cannot successfully execute something, he becomes dejected. A devotee who is always transcendental to all these disturbances is very dear to Krishna. So you can read more, but I think we'll stop there. But, you know, as if Krishna is telling us something very special, very confidential. And he's saying, you want to be dear to me. You really want to come closer. You want to understand what is necessary. And he's telling us we have to rise above duality, that our position is to not to be envious, not to see ourselves as the proprietor. We know that we can see ourselves as the proprietor, or we can play God through grandiose type of mood and false ego. But we also can play God by so much self-pity. Sometimes people get together and they have pity parties, you know. they just get together, they just share all their disturbances and problems, and they cry and they, you know, boohoo on each other, and it goes on and on. And next week they have another pity party, you know. Of course, it is good to grieve, to express one's emotions. Matter of fact, devotees should always be so open that they're doing everything as an offering to Krishna. And so therefore, devotee is not so much into sort of secretive sort of lifestyle, because our life should be our message. And we do have to honor confidentiality, and we do, sometimes due to circumstances. But we should do it with a sense of regret. Because for a model of love, we should always be able to speak what we feel and say what we mean what we say, and say things that can assist and that can help to draw us all toward thinking more of Krishna. And we should do things that should remind others of Krishna. But sometimes circumstance may not allow that, but we should not act in that particular mode. And there's too much confidentiality. It means too much chance for things in the closet. It means too much chance for people to honor each other in a respectful way. It means that it makes enemies and friends, so many different things. And Krishna explains in the story of Govardhan Hill, and he says how a Vaishnava really does not keep his mind, does not hold secrets as such, but it reveals their mind in such ways. And so a lot of the things we did in some of these days was looking closer at what the mind is, what can happen when it's not properly under control. And we also did some nice revealing of mind, which is part of Kriti, a part of devotee's association in love. On that note, we want to do an interactive thing for about three to 5 minutes or so. Just as yesterday, we had this wonderful discussion in looking at forgiveness. We evaluated what that means to us. We looked at some of the negative aspects when we hold grudges, what we may be thinking or what we do, etc. And we did a little exercise in trying to not be our enemy's enemy, or trying to see those who may have offended us or we may have had issues with. We try to look at these persons and consider that often one who is harming us, this assault or the harm that they project on us, is often relative or aligned with the degree of pain that they're suffering inside. And so we saw there are many ways to perceive and to codify situations to make it positive. A devotee is constantly trying to see how to turn even so-called negative things into positive or to auspicious concerns. And when there is success and auspiciousness, devotee is constantly trying to see how to make it more auspicious. We should not get into a mood where we're just trying to either enjoy or exist with Maya, or even just combating Maya, because we also become disturbed and destroyed and wounded in just combating Maya constantly. Therefore, we have less chance to be able to really to serve, to work on ourselves, to glorify Krishna, etc. So Maya sometimes has that trick of just keeping people so active in crisis and in reactive modes that then one doesn't have chance to really be about what our mission is, or what we have joined, and what our vows constitute. So we like to, again, as we did yesterday, and perhaps you're sitting different, so you wouldn't have the same partner, but you'd pair off in twos. So just kind of turn your chairs around in a minute, and the partner that's close to you, one is close to you. And what you do is we like you to share for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then to shift after 2 or 3 minutes. We like you to share experience that you had, where you had an issue with someone, but you were able to forgive that person. And just to share a little bit about what the issue was and how you felt after releasing that anxiety, that anger, that frustration, etc. So if you can just do that for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll discuss that very briefly and move on to several other things in the little time that we have. So if everyone understand, someone who you in the past had an issue with, that at some point you were not forgiving that person, but then by some stroke of mercy, grace, realization, intuition, mercy of super soul or whatever, that you realize that you were holding some improper considerations toward that individual. Perhaps they did something to you that was quite disturbing, or maybe you perceived that they did something. But anyway, that you felt bad about the situation and you were holding some ill will toward the individual. But then you released that ill will. And just mention a little bit about the incident and how you felt after being able to release that anxiety, that grudge. And if you have no one who you've ever had these feelings toward, then you can explain that also. You explain your secret of how you have managed to reach state of perfection. And next year you should give a class, How to Attain Perfection. So if you can do that for a few minutes. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. I'm sure you have a long list because you are very forgiving entities, but this one highlight is necessary. Just before we discuss something about what you discuss, let me just read one or two of the short ones. Also from Bhagavad Gita, that text 15. Similarly, the scriptures, the sages, the saintly persons, the devotees, representatives of Krishna, of God, they are very much anxious to take us back to Godhead, back to home. That is nisshresyasya, that is the ultimate benediction, enamored by the temporary society, friendship, and love, and it has become a thankless task for the saintly persons, devotees of God, to drag them. Oh, please come here. Please chant Hare Krishna. Please be Krishna conscious. Please be God conscious. Nobody likes it. They think it's a botheration. Why Swami, is Prabhupada talking, why Swami comes here and bothers us, but it has become the business? Therefore, the qualification of a saintly person is tatikshava, very tolerant, very tolerant. Just like Lord Jesus, he was crucified, still he was tolerant. He, at that time of crucifixion, he is praying to God, my Lord, these people, they do not know who they are, what they are doing. Please forgive them. Just see how much tolerant, tatikshava, there is. This is the first qualification of saintly persons or God's servants. Prabhupada says, this is the first qualification of saintly persons or God's servants or God's son. Very tolerant. They have to push on their Krishna conscious movement or God conscious movement through so many odds. Now, toleration doesn't mean that we look at people in a snobbish way or condescending, and we just say, well, I'm just going to tolerate you in the spirit that I am wonderful and you are nonsense, and Prabhu, I am just going to tolerate you. And sometimes we have that kind of mood. I am tolerating you, Prabhu. There you go again, but I'm tolerating you. I mean, I shouldn't be now. I should be angry, but I'm tolerating you. But it means to really to speak truth, live truth, and not to retaliate even when there is a reason to, but to bring things to a higher level. Doesn't mean that we should be foolish, we should be in denial, or that we do not address issues. A Vaishnava's position is to deal judiciously, expediently, righteously, according to the caliber of the crime, and after the crime has been evaluated, or the offense, and then we forgive. Advanced transcendentalists are called Sudhiya. Sudhi means intelligence. Sudhi means highly advanced. Sudhi means devotee. One who is both devoted and highly advanced in intelligence. This is from Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 24. One who is highly advanced in intelligence does not take action against the soul or the body. If there is any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is a quality of those who are advancing in spiritual life. So when we are holding on to grudges, it's a sign that we're not sufficiently advancing, and we're relating too much to our body, to our mind, or having other attachments that are unhealthy, rather than letting it go, moving on, or trying to elevate it, to change the maya into bhakti. So we'd like, just for a few short minutes, to just discuss what you just shared amongst yourselves, and again, to help our attentive listening, if perhaps we can start off, if someone can share what their partner said. You can start some what you were told, you can share from the partner. Yes.
You have a conflict with somebody, you talk about it and you release. Sometimes it's a limited way of what to release this feeling you get from the other person to the person.
Okay. So in general, so conflict.
And then once you are able to address the issues, then there's a release, which your partner presumably felt in some or many exchanges.
Mm-hmm. So she said that she had a grudge against her mother who was very abusive, and then she had to go to a therapist, and the therapist helped her relax, become detached, and take another perspective, you know. And then now she can deal with her mother, put boundaries, limits, and she can accept her mother as she is. She's not going to change her, and she can take some distance. And
We often have a lot of issues with our mothers, fathers, uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews. That's what family is about, right? Even secular family, they touch our buttons. And spiritual family even more so. Because we're literally designed, I mean, Krishna arranges, Prabhupada arranges society so we can purify each other. And so the sadhu sangha, sometimes it gets a little intense. Sometimes a person who's very introverted has to associate with someone who's very extroverted, and they really touch each other in an interesting way. Often the person you have the most difficulty with in your devotional service may be that person who can help you in looking closer at yourself. Because sometimes friends, they don't really, you know, there are areas that some type of friendship, people don't actually share some things they really feel the friend should work on. And so, but others may see those things and address them even faster. So in some cases, those we may see as seemingly our enemies or adversaries may be the persons that Krishna has arranged in our lives really to help us to look deeper at something that we normally wouldn't address ourselves, or we wouldn't, or our friends would not be able to bring up. See, the more we're serious, everything becomes a chance to serve Krishna. Everything becomes a chance to cry out to Krishna more, to learn something from it, to help someone else. Every interaction is either learning or sharing. Every interaction is important because we realize that it's Krishna's time and that Krishna has some reason for everything. So we're constantly trying to look behind each instance in our life to see how we can offer everything back to Krishna in a way that he'll be pleased. Someone else can share with something from their partner? Mm-hmm.
He said that that his temple president, he put some wrong accusations on the letter to his spiritual master. And in the spiritual master, actually, he chastised him severely. So, but later he spoke and the thing was corrected. So he forgave both the temple president and the spiritual master.
Okay, so he was angry at everyone, right? The spiritual master, the devotee, he's ready to join another society, huh? And he got some realizations, yes.
Question. Sometimes said that you can forgive, but you don't have to forget. So what is your opinion?
Well, as devotees, we should constantly learn from the past, but look to the future. The past is a reality that we have experienced, and so we want to learn from it. Devotees often, we're expert in not forgetting, but we don't forgive sometimes so easy. But we shouldn't forget. But we should forgive, however. Yes. Anyone else? You're writing in the air, huh? Okay. Yes.
What if if you don't have the Brahminical culture? Just like Dhruva Maharaj says to Narada, Narada, what you so kindly explain, this doesn't appeal to me, this kind of philosophy.
Okay.
Pierced in my heart, these words of Saruji, they have pierced me. You know, I can't help it.
Sure.
So in other words, what if
situation is such that the intelligence is aware that one should forgive, but one's heart one is not able to forgive, and the person should feel very, very sad that they have given their power over to that situation. They should feel very sad that they've let that person assault them many times over. They should feel very sad that they're so weak that they just want to hold on to these things, and they should be sad how they're going to make themselves sick. Are they going to make themselves stressed out? I mean, all this happens. There are so many studies that show that anger and holding on to such things, it's bad for the mind, for the body, and of course for our spiritual growth. Now, if we can, some can share their own. A few people can share from their own situations. Yes, in the back.
I had a problem with a female friend that I wanted her to be closer to her. She was my girlfriend. And it hurt me very much that she didn't want to see me that often.
She didn't like your bald head
now, huh? She's a Krishna man, bald head. Oh, no. Yes.
So I wanted to see her every day for a lot of hours, and she wanted to see me for 1-2 weeks for 2 hours, you know? So that really bothered me, and I felt hurt a long time. I felt like half a man and half anyone. And Krishna helped me, if you want to... Krishna helped me by understanding that maybe I'm, I wouldn't be satisfied then, you know? So.
That's nice. So often do you see each other now? Never? Oh, okay. This is really out. That you're worried about this little problem, you take it away, I got a bigger problem. Yes, sometimes the thing that we're really attached to, it may not always be the best thing for us. And, you know, Krishna, he plays that flute, he's a trickster. So we start calling his name. You know, it's very dangerous. We were talking about the potencies of chanting and the trouble with inattentive chanting. But when you realize when you're chanting, you're really saying, "Dear Radha, dear Krishna, take it away, take it away, take it away. Anything that's interfering in my coming to you, take it away, take it away. Anything that I need, bring it to me. Bring it on, bring it on." So it's a dangerous movement. powerful mantra, you see. That's why if we're not attentive and we're saying, "Krishna, bring it on," he brings it. We won't use it in the right way. Or if we're inattentive and Krishna is trying to take something away, we'll be holding on to it. And it'll be something that's unhealthy for us. Anyone else can share their own?
Mm-hmm. It's before I was a devotee. I had a friend who, I think he stole from me. So I was holding this grudge, and there was no way I was going to be his friend ever.
You wasn't sure, but you wanted to blame it on him, right?
No.
You see, that was him?
Yeah, definitely. He had a history of stealing and lying, you know, really dodgy situation with him, suffering. But then when I became a devotee, I had a festival in Southampton University, arranged for a festival, and I invited him to come. I just thought, it doesn't matter. Just whatever, you know. So it just shows that, you know, once we start connecting to devotional culture, that these material considerations, they no longer bear the same weight. So, and then he came and got prasadam, got some association.
And when he came, you realized that he really wasn't a friend, huh? Friends steal from each other. It's interesting, though. I remember in college, university, I had a friend who was so close to me. We were like twins, you know. We did everything. It was amazing. We had so many things in common that were similar. We ate the same food. We had the same egocentric tendencies. We had similar background. We liked the same girls, everything. When I became a devotee, I saw him a few years later, and we had absolutely nothing in common. Not one thing. I mean, it was so awkward that we just realized we need to leave each other, depart, and never see each other again. We had absolutely nothing. Our eating, our habits, our jokes, and nothing was in common. And it was like, I was looking at him, "Who are you?" And he was looking at me, "Who am I?" And I realized, oh, you know, Krishna consciousness really reveals so many things, because so often our relationships in the past were based on different types of sense gratification. And so people hurt each other based on sense gratification, the scarcity of sense gratification, or they connect based on the sharing of sense gratification. A few others?
I have a friend in Canterbury. We did a Namhata program together, and the last program was just like this, like some kind of stuff going on. Neither of us knew what, but we ended it on, she was saying, "This is the last program I'm ever doing," and then we went away like that, and I was just like, "Oh, how can she talk to me like that?" And then I thought about it, and like the next day I thought, you know, well, it's not really a personal thing. I don't have to take it personally, you know, because I just try to see it as, you know, when something's kind of starting to be successful, then mind sends some obstacle to try and, you know, to stop it. And I just sort of try to look at it objectively and not get caught up in the person. Like, it's not her, it's just, you know, just see it
in
that
way. Very good point. Sometimes an individual is carrying some action or is the catalyst, but not is it really so personal. That whenever there's, when we mentioned that a little bit, when there's an opportunity for a big chance to preach, a big chance for growth, then there's always so much static, so many things happen. And often right after big success, then things happen. So we almost have to be ready for it, anticipate it. So when such things do take place, they do not catch us off guard. Anyone else?
Mm-hmm. I had a devotee friend, actually two devotee friends. There was some incident, and what came out was that they both fell right on the backs of my husband and me, and they became so insulting. And there was also involved for us a great material loss, and as a loss of money. And in this time I was just going crazy, you know. I was almost going crazy because of the family, and there was so much money that they might lose. And then I was discussing very much with my husband about this thing so that I can understand what's going on. Then I could understand the way they behave like this is because that's their way to deal with this problem, and it's nothing personal. And the second thing I could understand is that as long as I'm really eager to become a devotee, all these material things that happen around, they cannot influence, they cannot touch me. So if this will have a bad end for us materially, still I can become a devotee, and this has nothing to do with my real goal in life. And that was the point where I then could forgive them, and I felt pity for them, where I could also send them loving energy, how to say, so that they can overcome their problems, because I didn't have to make it for my to my problem.
Right.
Yes, when we are offended by someone, we really should feel sorry for them, because, you know, there's karmic reaction that people will incur. So instead of feeling angry, we should be careful that we don't allow someone to make offenses. So we want to be careful not to set ourselves up so that that will happen. And sometimes we do find these things. We want to look at it in such a way that it doesn't destroy us or create more problems than the problem that we're already having to address. Maybe one or two more.
Mm-hmm. There's often a discrepancy what I could not define. What are we trying to say and the way how we are expressing it towards other people. So... because the other people are understanding that in different way than actually how we meant something.
So, to try to be clear in how we communicate our feelings, often we are not necessarily at fault, but someone may miscue what we did, or someone else is not at fault. We may have miscued what they have done. I'm just writing a long letter to some of my leaders in South Africa, and I was... he's explaining just general things about conflict. South Africa is such a diversified place. And so I was trying to help the devotees to realize that as Vaishnavas, in one sense, you know, we can celebrate diversity. Because in the spiritual world, there's so much diversity as long as it is centered with unity around Krishna. When there is diversity or conflict, we can see conflict as a chance to honor that diversity. Sometimes diversity is an outgrowth just due to growing and maturation experiences. Or diversity can help us to look closer at what's working and what isn't working, look closer at systems, to see what is successful, so we can put more energy into that. It can help us to see what is not successful, so we can make some alterations. Conflict has a way helping to clarify aspirations, needs. And for us as Vaishnavas, conflict should usually act as a wake-up call to draw our attention closer to see how to serve better, in that sense. Mm-hmm.
Kind of question, Maharaj, is it possible?
Please.
I know one family, you have a son, and the son is like a what completely clear mind, and he's also like a little drug addicted. And he do all kinds of nonsense things, steal things, break things, and from his parents. But every time, forgive him and let him come back. So I want to ask you, is there something like intelligent forgiveness and unintelligent forgiveness? So like how far you can go with forgive, like, and the person will learn from it.
Well, as we were mentioning, Vaishnavas forgive after clarifying, chastising, and they forgive. Because if we do not arrange to chastise according to the caliber of the crime, then it's like reinforcing that particular crime, and it's also sending a message to community that this act is okay. And as we are to be servants of each other, and to we call each other Prabhu, so we are to act in such a way that's going to inspire Krishna consciousness in the environment. So when something is happening improper, and if we don't address it, then it's like we're reinforcing it. And it will come out later in various ways. And then when we do try to address it, it will usually be more difficult, much more problematic.
Mm-hmm. I have been hurt, and I have taken Chaitanya Dhyani name on Bhagavatam, and I have realized that this is my karma. I have no other choice. I have to tolerate, because I have surrendered my life to Krishna, so Krishna is in charge. Maybe if he gives me difficulties, that's for my purification. So when I'm suffering, I'm thinking I'm getting rid of some bad past activities. So like this, I'm a bit more clean, and I'm going closer to a pure state.
This is the Dayabak. Yeah, the Dayabak conception. Is that there are some things that we're suffering from, and we haven't done anything in our immediate life space that has engendered that, but some things from the past, and the karma has caught up on us. And so sometimes when Krishna sees that we're serious, that we're crying out, then he lets things kind of pour or come very rapidly so that we can move through it. So they come upon us excessively because we are now going to move outside of that into a new chapter. So that happens sometimes also. Let's take a last one.
Yes, try to speak loud.
I was cheated by an elderly person in the society, social worker, and then I was hating him, the first person in my life. And it kept for a time, some years, but then there was a big plane crash in our society in Amsterdam, and many people died. And then I was very in pain about that thing. And at a certain moment, he pointed me out the place where there was a gathering of people to come over their pain. And from that moment, I realized that I shouldn't keep this man in my heart because he helped me still at the end. So at that moment, I cleared it up.
There's sometimes when we are in such an arrangement, someone has offended, assaulted us, wounded us, we can also minimize some of the pain, even eradicate it, by looking at things that we did with them, they did with us, that were wonderful, or that did offer value, or that did assist us. It's like everyone, even ourselves as devotees, we all have so many things that we're still working on. But any devotee, a new devotee, old devotee, you can always find so many wonderful things about that person. And we can amplify those characteristics, or we can reinforce certain negative things by either ignorance or by just hampering on them excessively. And then it acts in the other way. Let me just read one or two things back on depression, and then we'll do a roundup. This is from Nara Bhakti Sutra. One particular statement that attracts me was his reference to enthusiasm in bhakti. This is from the introduction of the Narada Bhakti Sutra. Coming on Sutra 5, Srila Prabhupada compared enthusiasm to a powerful engine that has to be used properly. He wrote, if one, however, becomes disappointed in his enthusiasm for serving the Supreme Lord, that disappointment must also be rejected. But just as we reject having ill will towards someone, for a reason or for no reason at all, we are to reject such. In order to be loving, We are not to wait for somebody else to love us in order to be compassionate and kind and devotional. We're not to wait for someone to act devotionally to us, because the way we act, we'll obviously we're considered by Krishna, and we'll get more things according to that consciousness. Bhagavatam 11:25-18. When one's higher awareness fails and finally disappears, and one is thus unable to concentrate his attention, his mind is ruined and manifests ignorance and depression. You should understand this situation to be the predominance of the mode of ignorance. So lack of forgiveness and depression has a lot to do with our higher awareness failing us, losing our higher discrimination. That's one or two of the short ones. Here Prabhupada is in a room conversation in September 2nd in London, 1973. A guest is asking, telling Prabhupada, "Well, that has brought this disaster and is causing more and more trouble. I think more and more in practice of medicine, we look into the practice of medicine, I think we are more pressed with the problem of mental illness. I should say in the region of 30% of our time is devoted for people suffering from mental anxiety, which we call anxiety state, and partly depression. I think most of the time, I surmise, part of the problem is not that they are not well fed. It is not that they are not well dressed. Part of the problem is to accept as they are and to think of something which is present. I mean, they could believe that there is something beyond this world, and if they can accept that, probably they will be better off and they will accept their present inconveniences more easily and will not be depressed." The guest is agreeing with Prabhupada that in his profession is a medical practitioner, and he is saying that in the practice, 30% of people are mentally challenged. And he was agreeing with Prabhupada that if they could understand there's something beyond this world, something beyond just what they are experiencing, beyond the limitations of material culture, then there would be less people in this frustrated, devastated state. And Bhagavad Gita 2:14, Matra Sparsha to Kanteya, Sitosha Sukha Dukada, Agama Payina Nityas, Tam Tatiksha Bharata. If one is engaged in his cultivation of spiritual life, then he should tolerate all these body pains and pleasures. If you're too fixed on pleasure, there's also a problem, because when it's not there, then we'll lose our enthusiasm to prevail in our devotional service. If we're mainly fixed in doing our devotional service, when there is facility and a lot of comfort, then when those things are not there, we will become slack, or we'll give up our service.